Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners. Today I have a special guest. Her name is Jessica. She actually hosts her own podcast as well. A little bit about her. She's a mom. She's an ex-wife. She's a wife, stepmom. I mean, she's just got a laundry list of things that she is and who she is. But one of the reasons why I really wanted to bring her on and talk with her is for just how bold she is. I mean, that is her. She is out there. She is, you know, showing the world how to live your best life being you. So welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So I kind of gave a little bit of a rundown, but I really want you to speak on like who you are, what your podcast is about, and why I would even want to bring you on today.
Yeah. So as you said, I am a mom, stepmom, wife, ex-wife, and a bold action taker. And for me, that means being bold. People see me sometimes and they're like, oh, that means to be loud and bright and in your face. And like, I have a shaved head, so I look a little extreme, those types of things. And really what it means is just to lean in to who you are and who you feel created to be. For me, this is who I am. This is what I feel called to do. And I just lean into that. But for other people, it may look very differently. My podcast is hosted by myself and my ex-husband. And yes, you heard that right. Myself, my ex-husband, and my husband, I should add in there. So the three of us host our podcast together. And it is sharing our stories of love, marriage, divorce, coming out, and remarriage, co-parenting, all of the things that we've been through to kind of help other people understand that they can own their stories, that they can let go of the shame or the things that they might be feeling around their own story to be able to live into a bold life. And we have just really loved being able to do that, to share what we have been through to help other people and help them embrace who they are.
Yes. Okay. So husband, ex-husband, you.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Yeah, you want me to start like
you, yes,
at the beginning?
I want you to dive in because, I mean, from what I know and our listeners may not know, you were obviously married and you had a kid. Uh-huh. He came out. I'm going to give a little synopsis real quick.
Yeah.
He came out being gay, divorced, and now you guys are still friends.
Yes. Yes.
So take us on that journey.
Yeah. So we, my ex-husband, Steve, and I met years and years ago. I can't remember how long it's been now. And it was like we instantly clicked. We met one night. He asked me out the next day. And we were together every day after that we could be. We just really fit together well. And we were both raised we're both Mormon, LDS. So very conservative Christian religion. And we like followed the path of what you're supposed to do, of how your life should look. And we met in February. We got married in December. And it was actually pretty early on in our marriage that I realized he was gay. I found a bunch of pornography on our computer and it was all gay porn. And while I know sometimes straight men look at gay porn, it just like in me as like this, he's gay. Like he is gay. And at that point he was still in denial. He's like, no, I'm not gay. And it was mostly just because he never felt that was an okay way to be. Like, you are not gay. That goes against what we supposedly believed and all of those things. And so he very much was in denial and suppressed that side of himself. And then after a while he was in counseling and the counselor's like, yes, these things are an issue that you're struggling with. But the real issue is that you're gay and you need to accept that about yourself. And that was about 2 years into our marriage. And we started talking about it. Like, he could at that point openly say to me that, yes, I am gay. But we were both really happy. We had a great time together. We had fun. We were like in the midst of trying to have a kid and all of these things. And that was what we wanted. And so we stayed married.
Wow.
Yeah. My husband's always like, now, why didn't you leave at that point? I'm like, I don't know. I could ask you the same thing about your ex-wife.
You're like, if this is the worst problem that he likes men, then you know what? We're probably doing okay.
Yeah. And it was interesting because we were very close. Like, we were so open about everything we were going through that it really brought like a level of intimacy to our marriage and all of the things that a lot of my friends were complaining to me about in their marriages. So I was like, what harm is this? Like, we're doing good. So about 5 years into our marriage, we were able to have a little baby girl. She came into our life, and that has been the greatest blessing. About 2 years after that, so right before she turned two, Steve did end up having an affair. And we tried to work through that. Like, we were like, okay, we can still make this work. And he was so torn at that point. And people always ask, an affair with a man? Yes. Yes, it was with a man.
It was like testing the waters. It was like, am I really gay? Or am I like, is this just like a fantasy?
100%.
You have to try it out.
And he, like, and that's what he said. He's like, I thought I would try this and I would feel repulsed and gross and I would feel horrible. And he's like, well, I felt horrible for hurting. He felt horrible for hurting me.
Yeah.
And what, you know, the impact it had on our family. He's like, everything else about it felt right. And like, I finally found myself. And I could tell that in just how we talked about it and how we talked about all of the things after the affair. And so we tried to work it out for a while just because he was still like, I can't leave you guys. I can't leave the church. Like, I don't know what to do. And so we stayed together for a little bit and it was a hot mess, like such a mess.
So did he come to you and say, hey, like, I've had an affair with a man. Did you figure it out? Like, what was that?
So it was over Labor Day weekend and my daughter and I, Penny and I, had gone home to Boise. Actually, we were living in Oklahoma at the time. We had come to Boise for a family reunion. And I got home and I remember, like, clear as day, Penny and I get out of the, like, we're coming through the airport and we get to the spot where we can see Steve. And I see Penny and she, like, takes off running to her dad. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, something has drastically changed. Like, I just knew within me something wasn't okay. And I'd had those feelings before in our marriage where I knew things were off and Steve wasn't okay. But this was like deep. And I asked him that and I'm like, is everything all right? Are things going okay? And he's like, yeah, everything's fine. But also that night, like, he wouldn't be intimate with me, which always when I came home from a trip, it was like, hey, right, welcome back. You know, right, it's good to see you again, that type of thing. And he couldn't engage with me. And I was like, okay, something is wrong. He's just not ready to tell me. And I, for like the next week, I would be up as soon as he fell asleep. I'd be up like just bawling and crying myself to sleep. And I remember watching Friends at like 2 a.m. trying to get my brain to shut off so I could fall asleep. And then finally, one day I like got on his phone and I was like, okay, I know I can get the answers. And this was something I like did not do because I wanted to respect his privacy. I knew he had friends that he corresponded with just for support with what he was going through and all of that. But I got on his phone and I like found this email that I was like, this is a person that he would email and tell everything to. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up, I started reading it. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't go into like disrespect his privacy like this. And so later that night when we were in bed, I told him, I said, hey, I'm sorry. I got on your phone today. I got your email. I opened this email. I didn't read very far. I read the first couple lines. I didn't read anything. So I don't know anything, but I feel like I should tell you. And at that point he flips on the light and he's like, Jessica, you have no reason to be sorry. Like, this is what's going on. I had this affair, still in contact with him. And we had this whole big conversation about it. So that's how I found out. And it was only like a week later. Kudos to him for being honest with me at that point and just telling me. So yeah, we, like I said, tried to make it work. We ended up getting divorced. By the end of that year, we were actually officially divorced because we just got it done. We knew that was the right thing to do. And just continued forward. And it was like in that process, I really started diving into knowing myself and knowing myself in this new reality. And that's partially what I believe being bold is being open to finding out who you are and what you need now when circumstances have changed.
Right.
And I thought, well, what is my fear around getting divorced? Where are my concerns at? What do I need to know going into this? And I realized my biggest fear, I knew I would be okay. My biggest fear was for my daughter.
Yeah.
And how this looked for her. She had just turned 2. And I was trying to decide, like, what does this look like? So the only version of divorce I had seen, and I didn't experience divorce firsthand, but like friends or people in church or my friends at school, like all of those, it was always bitter and angry and like...
It's nasty.
Yeah. And parents couldn't be together in the same room and the kids always stressed when they are. And my concern was I did not want that for my daughter. I did not want her to worry when mom and dad came together for her big life events. Like, yeah. I wanted her to feel like we were there celebrating her and she didn't have to worry about what's going on between us. And so Steve and I had a lot of conversations during that time about how we could make that work, what we might want that to look like. And thankfully, we've been able to make that work continuing forward. And we've been able to find partners that have been able to embrace this dynamic because, I mean, Steve's one of my best friends. Yeah. I always tell people, I care deeply about him to the extent that it's like he's my brother. Like it's that deep of love and concern for his well-being. And so to find somebody that was okay with that is a little tricky.
Because it's a little hard being like, so I was married and I have this kid and then he's gay and I'm still friends with him. And you're like, yeah. First of all, okay, you're not just friends with him, but you're also friends with your daughter's husband, mm-hmm. your ex-husband, mm-hmm. you know, and you totally hit it on the head with like society is like, if you are divorced, you should hate each other yeah. and your kids should be miserable. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a lot of, you know, I had parents that were divorced and it was always kind of this fight. There was a lot of different things on what swayed my way, but, it's always a fight. You always yeah. fear when your parents come back in the same place. You're like, you're picking sides.
Yeah.
And there shouldn't be sides. They both made you. They both, you know, want, most parents in the end want the best for their kids.
Yeah.
And you guys being able to honestly look past those things, you know, is kudos to both of you in being like, yep, I accept you for who you are. This isn't against me. That's who you are. And I'm going to accept that. And I think that is what is bold about you as well. Yeah. Accepting him for who he is.
Yeah. It's taken a lot of intentional work. And it still does. Like there are things that come up that I'm like, oh my gosh. Or vice versa. That yeah. he's like, what are you doing? And just realizing, okay, you know, we make mistakes. We own those mistakes. I say, hey, I'm really sorry this happened. I want you to be aware before you hear it from Penny, before it comes up, like this is what happened. And just owning those, I think, goes a long way in these relationships. Now, I want to make it clear, like I understand that not everybody can have a co-parenting relationship like this. We have right. a very different relationship with Matt's ex-wife, and it works for that situation, and that's great. So it doesn't, I understand that not everybody can have a friendship.
Yeah.
But for us, it's what's worked. And it's been such a beautiful gift that we have been able to give our daughter. She doesn't have to worry ever when we're together. She knows what she's going to get. Sometimes yeah. I'm sure she wishes we didn't get along so well.
Right. She's like, seriously, you guys yeah. both have to be here.
Yeah. She doesn't get away with anything. She's got a lot of parents that show up to support her. And, I'm just grateful for that.
That's awesome. So when you got divorced, were you down in Oklahoma then? And yeah. then you moved?
Yeah. So we were living in Oklahoma at the time and we had just recently moved there. We'd only been there like 3 months when Steve had the affair. And then like I left like a month after that. And I was just like, Steve, I don't have any support here. And I'll be moving out on my own. And like, we can't afford that type thing. And so figuring out.
And you're now
out.
A single mom. You know yeah. what I mean? You don't know what mm-hmm. that, at that time, you don't know what mm-hmm. that dynamic's going to look like or know yeah. that it's going to be this great.
Yeah. So, and he's like, that's fine. I totally understand. And so we decided that I would move back to Boise. We had a house here that we owned. And so Penny and I moved back into that house. For the time being. And Steve would come visit like every 3 weeks. Penny went and stayed with him and his partner at the time.
Uh-oh.
It was not tight. Down.
Technical.
down in Oklahoma. And so, yeah, I mean, like that's how we made it work for a while. Steve would come up. And then at some point, Steve was just like, I want to be by you guys. I want to be closer. And so he decided to quit his job there and moved up here. And it worked out great. But it was like an interesting process of figuring all that out and making that work and setting the new boundaries and all of those things. Like it's a lot of intention and understanding yourself and making mistakes and going through that process.
What was one of the biggest struggles that you had to learn within that new dynamic?
It took a while to figure out like where we stood in the relationship. Like what things do we share? What things are we comfortable hearing? What things do we just don't want to know anything about? And also just understanding that we did need to start at the basics of regaining some trust and respect. Even though we still loved each other, we still needed to repair some things that had happened. And so really making a conscious effort to respect the other person's time, to show our support for the other parent, I think that was huge in the beginning to establish the relationship that we have now so that we could be more open with our boundaries and what we're comfortable with. But in the beginning, I think it took a lot of just understanding, okay, Steve told me this. I really am not prepared to hear those things. Right. And just telling him that of, hey, I appreciate that you feel so comfortable with me, but maybe don't share this stuff with me quite yet. Down the road, I hope to be able to hear all of the things, but just acknowledging those things on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. So being back here and then obviously being in the dating world, then you get married. I mean, how did you go to your now husband and be like, this is a part of my life? Like,
yeah.
What is this dynamic like?
It kind of worked out super awesome. Steve and Matt, so my husband, ex-husband, actually kind of became friends through a mutual friend before I met Matt.
Wow.
So they, and not like they were really close, but they knew each other. They respected each other. They'd been mountain biking and stuff a few times. And Matt knew who I was, but I didn't know who he was yet. And so one night when they were leaving to go mountain biking, Steve actually introduced me to Matt. And I told Steve like a week later, I said, I'm going to marry Matt Frew. And he's like, what? You just met him. I'm like, I know. I used to make fun of people who said that, but I'm going to marry him.
Oh my
God. And it's still crazy to me that I actually did. Like, we are perfect together. And so it was nice that they kind of had that dynamic. And I actually asked Matt out the first time. And unbeknownst to me, he messaged Steve and said, hey, Jessica asked me out. I don't know what the status is of your guys' relationship, because he didn't know a lot of details. He didn't know Steve was gay. He didn't know whatever. Yeah. He just knew we were exes. He's like, I just want to make sure that that's okay and that you're okay with that. And Steve's like, yeah, like we're divorced. She's, if you're interested, go for it. And then like Matt and I sat down and shared our stories with each other of where we're at and what we've been going through. And, kind of went from there. I mean, he was dating somebody else, which I didn't know at the time. And he dated her for another 9 months. And he's like, I can't date you. I'm really flattered. But we can be friends. So every once in a while, like every few months, I'd be like, all right, well, just let me know when you break up with her. And we'd have a lot of fun together. And he did eventually break up with her. And he goes, I just couldn't get out of my head that you said we'd have fun together. And he's like, life has been hard and I want to have fun in my relationship. And so that's something I tell my girls now, my stepdaughter and my daughter. I'm like, find somebody you can have fun with and laugh with, because life is hard and you want to be able to find that joy even when things are hard. So,
and I think that open communication where you and new husband have that friendship and that was the basis. Do we need to get something for
it's
that?
Fine.
Okay.
We're good.
I'm like, Rylan, can we get my first like tech.
Why are we talking about not cutting?
Yeah.
We're good. I jinxed
We're
us.
Good. No, this is all part of it. I just, your guys' communication, your guys' friendship, that was the basis.
Yeah.
You didn't have that expectation. I mean, you knew you wanted to marry him. And I feel like you have an inkling for like the universe, the what you want to be, who you want to be. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I always say this is a gift that I've been given, but I also really believe it's something we can learn. And something that I coach women on is how to be in tune with what it is we really want so that we can take action. And the more we are willing to listen to those moments of, you know, thinking I'm going to marry this guy instead of going, you are crazy. But exploring that of, well, maybe this is right. Maybe it could work. And not thinking you're an idiot when it doesn't work out, but also thinking, okay, well, maybe there's a reason I needed to explore that and that So I really believe that the more you listen to your own intuition, to universe, whatever, the Holy Spirit, like whatever you may call it, the more in tune you are with that and act on it, the more you hear it, the more mm-hmm. clearly you hear that calling in life. And it brings you more peace and joy in your life, like yeah. more calm, even when things are hard, of knowing I made this decision because I knew it was the right thing for me. And it is. And I'm going to trust that. And I'm going to continue forward. And you pivot when you need to pivot and all of those things. But just acknowledging that you go through the things you go through for a reason.
Right.
There is a reason behind it. And while in the moment it feels crappy, and that's okay, lean into all of that. I'm not saying you ignore any of those feelings and those things, but also just trusting that it's working for you. Things are working for you. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think I actually was having a conversation with my dad earlier today about the friction in life. Mm. And sometimes the friction, you know, whether it be a relationship, whether it be your work, whether it be, you know, family dynamic, friction is there to kind of like test you. Mm-hmm. And then you either figure out, is this too much friction? Is this not enough friction? Is it good friction? Is it not? What do I do? You know, and you have seemed to be, you know, so honed into yourself. How do you teach other people to do that?
Yeah. So one of the main things, like going to what you're saying about this friction, is understanding, well, not judging that. Like, don't judge the friction. Don't judge, like, when you're uncomfortable or all of those things. Instead, get curious about it. Why am I feeling this way? Is this coming from a place of, I know I'm wrong, but I want to be right, so I need to humble myself and be teachable? Or is it coming from a place of, I know my truth, and this does not align with that? Mm-hmm. It's not in tune with who I feel I should be, and so I know that it's not right for me. And so we have a tendency to judge ourselves for wanting something that doesn't feel like something we should want, or something that we are told we shouldn't want, or you know, society's like, oh, your life should look this way, that's how it should look, so mm-hmm. don't go this way,
right.
But we really, our heart is calling us in this other direction. Instead of judging ourselves for that, instead get curious about why we want that. What are our intentions behind that? What is the drive behind that? Is there something good? Then go for it.
Right.
Then embrace that instead of judging ourselves and silencing other people's opinions. Leave them at the door and embrace what it is that feels right to you.
Yeah. And leaving people's opinions at the door, shaving your head. Yeah. I honestly can. And I actually, when we met at Empowered Women Connect,
uh-huh.
I remember talking to you about this, because when I was... gosh, I just looked at this. I think I was 20. Mm-hmm. I shaved my head. I donated all of it to Locks of Love.
It's amazing.
A little boy with leukemia, raised money. But the judgment you get for a woman with no hair is outstanding. It's not in a good way.
Yeah.
I mean, speak on that of how you've overcome that, and how you honestly, I mean, because some people do, they really don't have that, like, I'm going to do this for me. I don't care what your opinion is, you
yeah.
know? And teaching people that is very hard, because mm-hmm. there are some days, like, that is me. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm going to do it because this makes me feel good. It enlightens me. I'm following my passion. But silencing the other people can be very difficult when they are so negative and they are just prying and prying and prying. And then that curiosity comes, should I be listening to them or not?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think curiosity of why people are being mean,
mm-hmm.
that always kind of helps me. Like, are they jealous of something that I have? Are they insecure in their own abilities? Maybe they're just going through something hard. It has most of the time nothing to do with me.
Right.
And that's the thing that I've just come to learn in life, that most of the time when people are being negative, when they are insulting you, when they are calling you out on something, often it has nothing to do with you, even though it can feel very personal.
Yeah.
I had a lady in the drive-through McDonald's line like start yelling at me one day. Just, I was parked, I was in front of her in the line, so my window's down, and she just starts going off, and my daughter's sitting in the seat next to me, and the last thing she yelled at me was, well, at least I look like a woman or whatever. And I just started laughing, but also was like, what if I am non-binary, or I whatever, or if I'm going through cancer or any of these things, like how painful would that have been to me if I had been in a different situation? Yeah. And I was just grateful I could laugh it off. But I just thought, this lady must be having a really bad day. And I am an easy target because I can't do anything.
Right.
Except pay for her meal on my way out, which is what I did. Because I was like, that's either really going to tick her off, which I hope it doesn't, or it's going to make her be like, oh, you know, like, I'm having a bad day.
Like, thanks. Let's reevaluate what's happening and projecting that onto you instead of, you know.
And so I think that's just something that I've become very aware of, is that it's not about me. Most times it's not about me. And if it is, then they're not my people.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to carry that energy in my life. It's hard when it's people close to you, and it can feel very hurtful. But also, again, sometimes the people that, you know, our friends and family that we feel like should be in our lives don't get that space. They, mm-hmm. they're not welcome in that space because of the things they've said and done to us. And it's okay to protect your own energy and to protect your own choices and those decisions. So,
yeah, I remember, I mean, I very specifically remember losing a couple friends because they had asked, you know, like, oh, are you going to wear a wig? I'm like, well, then what the hell is the purpose of what I just did? Like, we're talking about it. It's bringing awareness. And I also didn't get jobs. I mean, there was a very specific job that they said, we will not hire you because the way you look. And I'm like, how ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is it? And then now we're hiring people with all kinds of colors of hair. And, you know, there is no boundary to what somebody can look like. And, you know, coming in there. And then the other two comments, it was always, do you have cancer?
Yeah.
And did you pull a Britney Spears? I guess my third one too, is this the way to come out and be a lesbian? Those were the three things. And it's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, it really comes down to, like, if you don't have anything nice to say, shut your fucking mouth. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we, like, people just don't think about what they're saying so often. And so I usually choose to, I laugh it off. And then I will come back with a comment of, I don't even know, but just trying to get them thinking about what they just said, of how that might feel to somebody else. Always try to be nice and kind about it, but just get them thinking, because we do say some really stupid things. And I catch myself that I'm like,
yes,
that was a dumb way to say that or to ask somebody that question. Like, why did I feel I had that right? But yeah, people say some crazy things. My husband always thinks it's hilarious that people ask him, well, how do you feel about it? And he's like, I don't care. It's her hair. Like, right. She can do what she wants with it. And I get that all the time. Well, what did your husband say? What does your husband think? I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
This is me.
And that also really shows people of, one, how superficial they can be.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the hair does not define who I am. Mm. I define who I am.
Yep.
The person, you know, and it is a kind of a self-check when, you know, I remember when I looked into the mirror and I was like, I just lost my identity. Yep. My hair is my identity, mm-hmm. you know. But it's like, no, there's more deep down inside you. It's the way you talk with people. It's how you talk with people. Hair has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And honestly, that's part of why I did it, was for my own, like, self-exploration of who am I without this identifying feature? Does it change how I feel about myself? Does it change about how I, like, the feminine side of me and how I embrace that? Like, what is it like to get rid of this identifying feature? And I've loved it. I mean, it's been like 2.5 years and it's great.
And you don't have to, you know, shampoo costs is down and, you know, all these hair bills and you don't even have to worry about it.
Saves time, saves money, all of the things. So, yeah,
it's actually a benefit. More people should do it.
I agree.
Oh, that's funny. So you teach people, you talk with people. I know at a couple of the events as well, you've done coloring books.
Yeah.
Like, you want to teach people, like, everything. Yeah. What?
Yeah. So my goal is to spread some of the things that I've learned throughout this process. And it was really a gift I've been given in all of this, is to be able to now have a voice to help other people who are going through something hard and may have lost their identity and are trying to find that again, or carrying that story of what they've been through and feeling shame and guilt around that and feeling unable to just own their story because of what they're telling themselves in their own head of what that looks like. And so we have, like, we're educating people on how to be allies and how to show up as allies and how to own their identity and to trust that in themselves. And to be bold. We have a bold affirmations coloring book. We have an LGBTQ plus coloring book that has, like, terms in it, so you can, like, start conversations around, oh, this is what this term means and all of those things. And then I do coaching and stuff for women as well. I have a retreat coming up this fall.
Ooh, how
super
fun.
Excited about that. So, fun. Yeah.
How do you think this is? I think our society has changed a lot within,
yes,
the gays, the lesbians, the LGBT, you know, all of the terms. Mm-hmm. How does that play into a role where society sometimes still has the old way of thinking, or, you know, they kind of test, is this true? Is this not? Is this to get attention? Is this to seek attention? You know, how do you encompass maybe somebody that's trying to seek and be different from, like, truly that's who they are?
Well, and I think, again, understanding that maybe that is who they are. Like, there's a discovery process for all of us. We have to go through that discovery process. We can't just poo-poo somebody for saying, like, oh, this isn't who they really are, or whatever. There's a process of finding ourselves. And so sometimes when we are seeking that attention, we all need attention. Mm-hmm. It's not like whenever I say to my daughter, she'll be like, so-and-so did this at school. And I'm like, oh, they're just looking for attention. I'm like, no, I have to stop saying that, because we all need attention. We all need love, and we all get it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But also, those people are probably needing something. They're needing something, whether that's needing something within their own selves, or if they're needing, they have a need that needs to be met by somebody else. They're trying to figure out a way to meet that need, whether it's in a healthy way or not, isn't really for us to judge, but being there to support them and try to help them in ways that are healthy and productive. But give people space to kind of figure out who they are. Like, mm-hmm, it is kind of a confusing time, because things are more open now. So we're adjusting and evolving and figuring out how this looks. And it's a lot of talk about it. And hopefully it'll be just a more natural thing in the long run, where it's like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And mm-hmm, so it's not such a big deal where maybe people are getting lost in that. But I think it's okay to have some of that self-exploration and to figure those things out. My daughter actually came to me a couple weeks ago, and she sent me a text. She was at her dad's house, and she goes, Mom, what does it mean if I think somebody who's non-binary is cute? And I'm like, I don't, whatever you want that to mean. Like, I responded with, well, you know, Penny, I think there are gay men that are cute, obviously. I think there are lesbians that are cute. I think there are babies that are cute. I think my husband's cute. I think you are cute. Like, there are different meanings around that. You get to explore what that means for you. It doesn't mean anything unless you want it to mean something. Like, it's okay to, mm-hmm, to figure that out. And she's like, oh, okay.
And how old is she?
She's 12.
That's such a fun age too, where they really are trying to explore, uh-huh, and figure that out. And then you have, you know, this whole relationship thing, and mm-hmm, boys are cute, and they said I'm cute, you, yeah, know. And, like, it can just also be a comment.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have any meaning or feeling or, you know, attachment to it. It's like, hey, I'm just giving you a compliment. Like, you're really cute today. Like, you have cute pants, you know.
Yes.
There's so many different realms.
Yeah.
And it's also what we make of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're teaching her.
Yeah. And you're going to learn what that means. She's going to learn what that means for her. Oh, does it mean I am attracted to this person? Maybe. Or is it just, you know, I think, oh, they are looking cute.
Yeah.
Like, own that. And I'm like, and that's great. Like, I want you to feel that for people, and to share that with them, because that's That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that's maybe where that person doesn't know they needed that attention, mm-hmm. but you're giving positive attention and you're giving positive affirmations to people yeah. instead of the lady at McDonald's screaming at you for something negative.
Yeah.
Like making it a little bit more normal that we can give compliments and not think that there is something that we need in return from it.
Yeah. Somebody else's value, appearance, beauty, whatever, is not taking away from our worth.
Yeah.
There's plenty to go around. And I think that we often feel attacked just by seeing somebody of, oh my gosh, they look so beautiful, or oh my goodness, they're so well-spoken, or they're doing so much in their life. That doesn't take away from you. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes we get hung up on that, feeling like it takes away from my worth and value.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny because I get 7 text messages a day of a new motivation. Mm. And mine that just popped up while you're sitting in here says, never apologize for who you are.
Love
and that
it.
Could not be more fitting for who I'm talking with, what we're doing, and not apologizing for that.
Yeah.
Like, I may be too much for people. You may be too much for people.
I know I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anybody listening, I want you to go to her Instagram and see her. Talk about a unicorn. Talk about, you know, this amazing, bold human being going to church in what you want to go to church because you feel good. Mm-hmm. That makes you happy. And how incredible for that to be able to share with people and be like, you know what? I don't care what you think. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change my faith. It doesn't change the way I am. This is who I am.
Yeah. It's none of my business, quite honestly. People try and make it your business, but you can walk away from that. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. So with your, you know, husband, you had mentioned earlier about the dynamic between, you know, you and your ex is different than what your husband and his ex looks like.
Mm, yes.
How does that all four of you guys, what does that look like?
Yeah. So like his ex.
Yeah.
And yeah. So like with Steve, my ex-husband, we do holidays together, we do birthdays together, and all of the things. We're very close and connected. With Matt's ex, there's definitely a lot more strict boundaries. And I always am hesitant to say this because boundaries are what bring people into your life and are what create healthy relationships. They need to be in every type of relationship, in relationships, but they're different depending on the type of relationship. And so we do have more strict boundaries so that my stepkids know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
They know, okay, because these boundaries are in place now, this, and this it's not going to happen between my parents because there isn't an opportunity for that. And that's good for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's healthy, even though, you know, it's what we say, it's more parallel parenting instead of co-parenting. It at least gives the kids an idea of what to expect. And it takes out a lot of drama, a lot of arguing, bitterness, resentment that they have to see or be a part of. And so I think that that's just a good thing to understand. And again, that's getting to know yourself and your comfort levels. And sometimes having those very clear, strict boundaries in the beginning can lead you to a better friendship down the road where those can get softened because you have shown respect for the other person's boundaries and that you trust them and all of those things. But yeah, so it's just very different. And to the extent that like our kids have different rules within our own home, and I have to tell Penny, I'm sorry, these are your rules. These are Matt's rules for his kids. And I think that was a hard thing even for me to understand too, is I thought, oh, you know, all of our kids will have the same rules and whatever. We talk about blending families. That's what you do when you blend a family. And I always like almost cringe at the word blending families as well, because we're not blended in a way that I thought that's what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
It works. Like, we've got a good dynamic. We figured things out, what works for us, but it's definitely still, you know, Matt is his kid's parent. I am Penny's parent, and it looks different. So it creates some interesting dynamics. But it also creates a lot of communication between us, between the kids, between each other, that I think this is amazing that these kids can learn some of these things now and understand different boundaries that they can set within our own family, and that that's okay. They're going to be respected, and it gives them empowerment of understanding, oh, okay, this is, I can say this, I can set this boundary. It's going to be respected.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, kids need those boundaries.
Oh yeah.
They're reckless. I don't have kids myself, but man, they're reckless.
Yeah. Well, and they need to know that it's okay to speak up for themselves, and that it's okay to have a voice, and that it's okay to feel things like around their own personal belongings. And that's something from day one that I've kind of really tried to establish in our home, because they go back and forth. I want them to know that they have things that are theirs, that they get to protect. They don't have to share them. They can say, no, this is mine. I don't want people in my room. Like all of those things, because it gives them that control when so many things in their lives are not in their control.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, kids need that practice for adulthood. And I think, you know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know, you know, within children, and they're just trying to learn, and they're just trying to react from what parents are, you know, reacting to them for. That's amazing. You know, you just being very open with the kids. And I think that's the part so many people have a hard time with, being open. They want to protect something, or they want to portray a different way than they actually are.
Yeah.
Instead of looking inward, seeing what they want. And it's a process.
It is
a process. It's not easy. It's not easy to be truly who you are, because you look at something and you're like, oh, who's going to judge me on this?
Yep.
Yeah. How, with that, I mean, what's a technique, I guess, to help people become more open, or to really not care about opinions when they just do? Like, sometimes that's just people.
Yeah. Honestly, it comes down to what you are telling yourself. People always tell me, like, well, I got a text from this person, I have to respond to it. Or they send me this email, I have to engage. Like, no, you don't. Like, you do not have to do anything. And they're like, well, then they're going to say this, or they're going to do that. I'm like, that's on them. That's not your business. And so people, like with their exes or their co-parents, are like, no, I have to do this, I have to do that. I'm like, no, that's the story you're telling yourself. You can think a new story. You can come up with a new narrative. And often it's, well, I have to defend myself. Like, no, you don't. And there is so much peace that comes when you realize you don't have to defend yourself. There are times that I will engage with people and I'll be like, you know, this is my reasoning behind this. This is why I do these things. There are other times that I'm like, it's not even worth telling you, because you're just going to come at me and it's going to crumple my sense of self, and it's going to bring up feelings I don't want in my life. And so I think understanding that there are times to engage, there are times to defend. But also, if you are saying, I have to do something, dive into that. Or like, I have to feel this way. I have to be angry and mad about this thing. I have to whatever. Like, dive into understanding that. I have like I call it my boldology journal, that dives into all of these things so that you can self-evaluate and get in the habit of asking ourselves these questions of, okay, what made me uncomfortable about this situation? Why did I want to do this? And all of those things, so that we start creating a pattern of getting curious about our own thoughts and opinions, and getting curious about why we felt the way we did when somebody said that negative comment to us, so that we can more fully embrace who we are.
Yeah. Is that journal something that you have, or is that something that they can purchase?
It's something you can purchase.
Yay!
Yes, I have them. I, over the years, realized that I kept asking myself these same questions when I would get in these hard situations or whatever. And so I made it into an official journal. I was like, okay, this is something that needs to be put out there. So
yeah. And where can people find that journal?
Yeah. So you can go to theboldlogic.com/boldjournal and you can get them there.
Yay. Yeah. All my listeners, also, I'll tag this into the show notes for you, so it's super easy and accessible. Yeah. Because you're an amazing person. I mean, you truly are. And being that person and being you and showing other people that they can also. And that's incredible because there's not many people like you out there. There's really not, you know, you're teaching them because that's what they need. They need people like you. So any of my listeners, any of my people watching, reach out to Jessica, husband in law. I mean, she will walk you through coaching, you know, even the LGBTQ, like the coloring book. If you or your family, you know, is going through a change or a situation or not knowing how to process it, please reach out to Jessica. Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah. And with that, I mean, tell us where else we can find you as we wrap things up.
Yeah. So the best places to find me are on Instagram, and I'm on there. It's technically all three of us, Matt, Steve, and myself, but it's mostly me on Instagram. And it's at husband-in-law. You can find us there. And then also our podcast. It's on any podcasting platform, and it is also called husband-in-law. Those are two best places to find us and anything we offer. And there you go.
Yay. Well, thank you again for coming in and sharing your story. I appreciate it. Everything that you stand for and being bold.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Your feedback is very important to me. If you could leave a review as well as follow me on Instagram at rawthoughts.podcast and email in at m.rawthoughts@gmail.com if you have any guest suggestions.